Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Among his other messages over the holidays, President-elect Donald Trump tweeted, "The United Nations has such great potential, but right now it is just a club for people to get together, talk, and have a good time. So sad." The tweet came as the UN Security Council voted on a resolution condemning Israel and its settlements. That position, the future American president vehemently disagrees with. The vote came after many years of seeking a two-state solution in the Arab-Israeli conflict. That two-state solution is now in doubt. But how frustrating is the experience at the United Nations these days? With the war in Syria raging, a famine in Yemen caused by a Saudi-led war, condemned by the UN, ignored by the Saudis and the U.S. for that matter. These are challenging days for the new Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, who began his term earlier this week. As an outgoing UN official just a few days ago at the end of 2016, I spoke with Deputy Secretary of the UN, Jan Eliasson, about some of the frustrations and challenges ahead for 2017.
We now face in this world resources that are getting more and more scarce. And there are two ways to deal with scarce resources. And I think the most important, the sacred one, in fact, is water. And either you choose the road of competition, rivalry, even conflict and war to have the water resources, or you choose the road of cooperation, the road of sharing, the road of confidence building by sharing resources. So water can either be a great source of conflict, but if we do it right, it could be a source of peace. This is a historic situation in which we find ourselves. I've served in Darfur. I was mediating in the conflict in Darfur, and I saw how the militia had thrown a dead dog in a well in order to chase the population into the camps, away from the village. But who was helped by this? Nobody could take over this village. We see also rivers across borders where one side needs energy and the other one needs agriculture. They have to work out ways of sharing water resources. So I think this is one of the key areas. It's really sort of the canary in the coal mine. The water issue is a sort of a miniature of the greater challenges related to climate change.
Would you say that the United Nations in 2017 is going to face a particular crisis, or that it's going to be facing all of what we've been speaking about in a more urgent and serious way?
Well, the most urgent crisis to deal with is, of course, ending the war in Syria and also realizing that there is no military victory in Syria, but that there has to be a cessation of hostilities, there has to be humanitarian access to all in Syria, and then there has to be the beginning of political talks, a political process. But then we cannot shy away from the existential threats, the long-term threats that stem from climate change and extreme poverty. And then there is something else that I fear very much, and that is the trend in today's world to divide our nations in ethnic or religious or tribal groups and identify those outside or those in the minority as being the problem. We have to deal with this trend of xenophobia and make sure that we come to the conclusion that most of our nation states, whether they're large or small, build on the strength of diversity, and that we should accept every human being's equal worth and value. That, I think, is something the United Nations, which is a value-driven organization, always must stand for and translate to concrete action on the ground. But that is basically a question for member states and the people in our nation states to stand up for these values.
I mean, that's what's so frustrating about the Syrian civil war. The war seems to be immune to any kind of peacekeeping. The Security Council seems to have no role in changing the conflict. It's at the center of a refugee crisis, which is on a scale exceeding that at the end of World War II. And right now, the United Nations seems powerless to deal with both the Syrian civil war and this refugee crisis.
Well, I've followed this conflict for the last almost 5 years. And I can say to you that this has become such a horribly difficult problem because we haven't dealt with it early on. if there had been a chance to present Kofi Annan's proposals of 2012 in the Security Council, reach a binding Security Council resolution, we would have had a different situation now. At that time, 2012, ISIS, Daesh, did not even exist. Today we have a situation where peace is so elusive, because we need to have agreement on the highest level between particularly United States and Russia. You need to have agreement in the region that they want to end this fighting. Agreement between Saudi Arabia, Iran, Qatar and Turkey. And then, of course, as you know, the opposition in Syria is highly divided and also interspersed with terrorist elements. So the situation has become so much more difficult by the time that has passed. So the lesson to be learned is that prevention must be the key priority for the UN. And that's the direction we have to go if we are to be in control of the present crisis in the world.
Finally, as you leave office and leave your tenure with all your long experience as a diplomat, how personally frustrating is it that you're walking away from a conflict where you've had almost no influence or very, very little influence? How difficult is that?
No, it has been difficult. But you have to sort of come to the conclusion that, like life in general, you have ups and downs and you have successes, you have failures, and you must not be depressed by the failures. It's part of the job. It's like Sisyphus moving the stone up the hill. You know, you get it back in the face every now and then. But I say, as Martin Luther, even if the world would go under tomorrow, I would plant my apple tree today. We simply have to mobilize the good forces and try to have a narrative out in the world that we need international cooperation, we need solidarity, we need to maintain the beauty of diversity in our societies, and that's what we have to stand for, as a value-driven organization.
Jan Eliasson, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Jan Eliasson is a Swedish diplomat and now the former Deputy Secretary General of the United Nations. I spoke with him just before he left his post at the end of last year.